What if the scariest part of your nightmares is that you might actually be able to stop them?
It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today, and Sleep Better Tonight.
Welcome to another episode of Sleep Science Today, where we talk about sleep and the science behind sleep. Today, we are covering an issue that affects many people, which is nightmares. We have a guest, Dr. Courtney Worley, and she has written the book, The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. So I'm interested in getting into that and helping you treat your nightmares. So, Dr. Worley, welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Courtney Worley. I'm double board certified in clinical psychology and behavioral sleep medicine, and I specialize in the treatment of sleep disorders, including nightmares and PTSD, seeing a lot of people at the intersection having both of those conditions. I do my work virtually at Upward Behavioral Health, where I see people across 43 states in the United States, and then I do a lot of training and consultation for other healthcare providers in evidence-based psychotherapies for PTSD and sleep problems.
Wow. Wow. Very impressive. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I'll just start off with a basic question. What got you to write the book? So the book is The Nightmare Sleep Disorder Toolkit. Why that book?
So that book, because there wasn't a book. So nightmares are a condition that affect a lot of people, 1 in 10 Americans. But then once we look at different subgroups, the rates can be even higher. And yet, even within the field of behavioral sleep medicine, there are not a lot of providers, that's changing, offering evidence-based treatments for nightmares. And not everybody has access to a provider. Not everybody wants to see a provider. And so, along with my colleague, Dr. Michael Nadorf, we set out to write this book to give people access to the evidence-based interventions that we use in our practices every day in a really accessible format. So the book is designed for people who have nightmares and sleep problems, people who love people with nightmares and sleep problems, and even our fellow healthcare providers. It's something that came about. I have a degree in public health, and so I always am thinking about how do we cover people at a population level.
Mm-hmm. Wow, wonderful, wonderful. Well, it's you said a lot in there, which I find to be, you know, things that I'm finding as well in terms of there's not a lot of people trained to treat it. It's not so accessible, the treatment. And I certainly want to get into those in a bit. But before we do that, I want to back up and let's start off with what the heck is a nightmare?
What is a nightmare? So a nightmare is something that most people have experienced at some point in their life. It's a really distressing and upsetting dream that feels dysphoric. For us to diagnose nightmare disorder, that nightmare has to cause an awakening with recalled content and then cause distress and impairment in the next day. And so it's something that may happen once every now and then for a lot of people, but when it becomes chronic, persistent, it's causing that disruption, that's when we start to talk about nightmares as a disorder or look for treatment options.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me make sure I got this right. So is it something that, you know, repeats itself? So maybe, you know, tonight I wake up and I have this, you know, what I call a nightmare. Can I expect that it's going to repeat itself in future nights, or maybe it's a one-off and I'm done? How does that work with actual, you know, nightmares?
It's a great question. So about 85% of Americans report having a nightmare in the last year. And the results are similar in other countries. So one nightmare here or there is a pretty common experience. And we don't usually do much about that. But when it starts to be more chronic or persistent, when it's happening several times a week or several times a month, I work with some people who can have nightmares every night or sometimes even more than once in a night. And that's certainly causing that disruption. So Just like we think about insomnia as a symptom, most people have had a bad night of sleep at some point or another, but we don't talk about insomnia disorder until it causes a problem. The same thing comes from nightmares. Nightmares are something that everybody has every now and then, but when it becomes persistent and causes that distress and impairment, we start to think about it as a diagnosis that would be treatable.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, yeah, my audience knows that I'm also a sleep clinician, so I work with patients. And one of the things that I hear from time to time is I'll be talking with a patient about, you know, what's going on, getting their background. And they may say to me, oh, and then I wake up with these nightmares. And I say, oh, that's interesting. Let's talk about it. And then I start to talk about it. And when they start describing it, they may say something like, well, you know, I got up sort of in the middle of the night and I was worried about this project that I have at work tomorrow. And this is, to them, coming across as a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Can you describe to us some other other symptoms, other issues that people may have that they may consider to be a nightmare, but clinically don't fit the definition of a nightmare?
Absolutely. This is one of the things we spend a lot of time with in the book, because we can have conditions that look like nightmares or people may perceive as nightmares, but don't meet our clinical diagnosis. And we can have a lot of conditions that co-occur. So somebody could have both nightmares and another condition. So let's start out with the ones that are sometimes described as nightmares, but maybe not fit that definition. One of the most common that I see is obstructive sleep apnea. So this is a sleep-related breathing disorder where people have either a cessation in breathing or a significant drop in their oxygen levels during the night. And you can imagine if you are stopping sleep and waking up kind of gasping for air, a lot of people will say, you know, I wake up, I'm in distress, maybe I have a racing heartbeat or sweating or some other kind of sensations. And they may describe that as a nightmare due to the physiological reactions and sometimes the emotional reaction that can come with that. But without that recalled content, it's not a nightmare. And that's an important distinction because those two conditions have pretty different treatments from pretty different specialties. We would deal with obstructive sleep apnea under sleep medicine and our MDDO friends. And then behavioral sleep medicine would often treat the nightmares. But those conditions also co-occur a lot. And so what I ask from my patients or when I'm working with other clinicians is for people to track how many of those awakenings happen where you have no content, no dream that you can recall, and how many do happen where there is recalled distressing content. Nightmares tend to have more of a storyline even than regular dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Another place where this often can show up is in people reporting night terrors. Now, night terrors are more common in children. They're also a parasomnia. And for night terrors, people who are experiencing the night terror don't really have any recall of it, but they'll wake up in distress, sometimes with vocalizations, and it's often really upsetting for others in the house, for loved ones, for family members, because they see this person who appears to be in distress, but they usually have no recall of it in the morning, and they don't have an awareness. There's not content necessarily that's going with it. And that tends to happen at different times. So while both are parasomnias, night terrors are a non-REM parasomnia. They tend to happen in the first half of the night. They're actually pretty common in children. Nightmares are common in children and adults. But sometimes I'll have people say they have night terrors and they're using language that sounds like a different sleep disorder, but they really mean they're having nightmares. So that content piece is important. I think another place where this shows up is in something called REM sleep behavior disorder, which happens primarily in older adults. And it has sometimes content and these vocalizations and physical movements during sleep. And so there's some research to look at are REM sleep behavior disorder-related nightmares responsive to evidence-based treatments for nightmares? And there's at least a couple of case studies that are coming out showing that we may be able to intervene on those. But again, it's a different sleep disorder than just a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So there's a lot of nuance in some of this, and that raised a couple questions for me. Mm-hmm. First question was, so if, you know, we hear about REM sleep, and for those of the listeners who aren't aware, REM is rapid eye movement. And that's, one of the stages of our sleep cycle. And typically, if someone has a dream, the dream is going to occur during REM sleep. So nightmares, do those also occur during REM sleep or only during REM sleep? Or what phase of sleep might someone have a nightmare?
That's a great question. So nightmares are typically thought of as occurring in REM because, as you pointed out, that's where dreams are already happening. And so those visual and emotional centers of our brain are active. And so nightmares often happen in REM sleep. There is some evidence to suggest that sometimes nightmares can occur in other stages of sleep, especially in trauma survivors. But most often you're going to see them showing up during that rapid eye movement stage of sleep.
Mm-hmm. So given that, you know, I'm thinking of a nightmare where maybe someone thinks that someone has come into their room and they're choking them, for example. So they've got this really distressing type of a vision. Is it common that during an actual nightmare that people would move and make noise and flail about, or is it more just happening in their mind where they think they're doing that?
That's a great question that a lot of scientists have a lot of things to say about.
Okay.
And so there's some debate in the field there. So what is supposed to happen in REM sleep is that, you know, our body is supposed to kind of paralyze our big muscle groups so we're not actually acting out our dreams because there's the potential for injury to ourselves, to a bed partner, and so on. And so we're not supposed to. In some people, that mechanism doesn't quite work 100%, and so they may have some movement. And this is one of the places where that REM sleep behavior disorder we were talking about really is true to come about. So people are having a lot of movement and sometimes can harm themselves, falling out of bed, harm their bed partner, those kinds of things. And so that is a place where I would really encourage, if you're having a lot of unwanted movement during sleep, if you're acting things out, really seeking out care because there is the potential for harm to yourself or others. Mm. That shouldn't be happening.
Wow. Okay. So in general, if somebody has a nightmare or maybe a couple nightmares over a few months, mm-hmm. is this something that generally they could expect would go away by itself? Or when is it that they should really be thinking about mm-hmm. seeing someone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, sometimes during periods of stress or major life transitions, people can have a few more distressing dreams or nightmares. And some of that has to do with, you know, if we're carrying anxiety or hyperarousal to bed with us at night, we go to bed in that mood. Then when we go to dream, our brain is kind of going to pick up images that match those emotions. And so you may notice increases in distressing dreams or nightmares during periods of high stress, and it may remit with the end of the stress, right? Uh-huh. For other people, those nightmares, if they're continuing to be consistent, it's probably something worth looking into treating, because oftentimes nightmares can become what we call a habit. There's a nightmare cycle where if we go back to learning theory, what happens is our brain learns that in order to escape this distressing thing, it wakes us up. And so the wake up serves as an escape or avoidance and gets reinforced. And so it kind of becomes this habit. And when we have those nighttime wake ups and we're distressed, our sleep is disrupted. Disrupted sleep causes problems in next day functioning. Problems in next day functioning increases arousal and agitation at bedtime, which then begets more nightmares. And so we get into this habit, this cycle of nightmares. And interventions that we have are really effective in stopping that, but it doesn't always go away on its own. Uh-huh. I would say that's also true in trauma survivors. If they're having trauma-related nightmares, there's usually some intervention that needs to happen to break up that cycle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that was sort of a great segue to where I was headed next. So next, I want to talk about PTSD and nightmares. But before we do that, I've got to stop and take a commercial break. So when we come back, we'll pick up with the PTSD connection. So stay tuned. We'll see you back on Sleep Science Today right after the commercial break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sleep Science Today offers a lot of great resources for our listeners, including a popular sleep support group. Don't miss out on what we have to offer. Find all of our resources at sleepsciencetoday.com. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe to this channel.
Sleep Science Today.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Courtney Worley, and we're talking about nightmares. And before the break, we said when we came back, we were going to talk about PTSD and its connection or not to nightmares. So can you fill us in? Where does PTSD fit or not in this picture?
Absolutely. PTSD was my pathway into nightmare research. And so I started out kind of working with combat veterans in a PTSD treatment program. We were doing an intensive treatment program and doing what we call evidence-based psychotherapies for PTSD, so cognitive processing therapy, prolonged exposure, and now written exposure, but that wasn't available at the time. And we found that people really saw this decrease in their PTSD-related symptoms, but one thing they kept saying was a problem even after effective treatment was nightmares. And we actually know from the research, this is a common thing, that post-evidence-based treatment, if symptoms of PTSD are going to hang around, it's going to be nightmares or other sleep disturbances and anger. And so this led us to think about what can we do when we have people here for this intensive treatment program to help treat their sleep, to help treat these nightmares. And so we looked at the available research and we found some different interventions like imagery rehearsal therapy and EERT, exposure, relaxation, and restriction therapy. And those were really effective. There was good research to support. And so we started doing this intervention in group. And in the time since, I've done it a lot in group and in individual. And then we put the tools into our book. And so for a lot of people with PTSD, they spend the time during the day trying to avoid unwanted thoughts, memories, and emotions. Avoidance strategy is one of the key things that keeps those post-trauma reactions going, but it's mm-hmm. really hard to avoid while you sleep. And our brain knows that in order to make sense out of really senseless events, in order to store away memories related to trauma, that it needs to process them and it needs to think about them. But the problem is when we're asleep, that logical, rational part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, is kind of taking a back seat. And those imagery and emotional centers are very, very active. And so it replays and it replays, but it can't get in any new information or new learning because that prefrontal cortex isn't there to provide information. And so a lot of people end up stuck in this nightmare habit for many, many years. I've seen people who have had the same nightmare most nights out of the week or a slight variation on it most nights out of the week for decades, post-Vietnam veterans that I've seen, 40, 50 years out, and they're still having those same nightmares. But the good news is we've got some really, really good interventions that help to stop those and change that relationship with sleep and trauma.
Wow. Okay. Well, that definitely raised two more questions in my mind right away.
It usually does.
Yes. So the first question here is, so if someone has PTSD, is it likely that they will also have nightmares, or is it just a subset of people that have nightmares?
It depends on who you ask and what population you're asking. Okay. So I would say that a lot of the people that I see, and that may be based on who comes to see me, but a lot of the people that I see that have PTSD have some form of sleep disturbance and often have comorbid nightmares. And one of the things that we often kind of try to figure out is doing an evidence-based treatment for PTSD the primary, or is doing a nightmare treatment the primary? That's a shared decision that I make with all of my patients. And some people will say, well, if I'm not sleeping, I'm not going to be able to do the other work. And some people say, you know, I think if we just treated the PTSD, the nightmares would go away. Mm-hmm. And so we often spend some time trying to figure out what's the preference, because a lot of people with PTSD will have nightmares. It's one of the symptoms of PTSD. Not everybody has that particular symptom, but the majority of people I see do. Whether that's related to, you know, combat or sexual traumas, childhood abuse, you know, motor vehicle accidents, it doesn't matter the source of the trauma, that often people with PTSD have some form of nightmare that's either trauma related or intermediate symbolic of the trauma.
Wow. Okay. So you in that answer, you sort of anticipated my next question and gave an answer, but I do want to get even more clarification. Sure. So if someone has PTSD and they are having nightmares, my question was going to be, and I know you kind of answered this, but is there one that you would treat before the other? Now, it sounds like you said it kind of depends on the circumstances. Can you expand upon that a little bit more? Like, if I'm a patient and I'm working with you and I have both PTSD and nightmares, how am I going to decide what to do?
Yeah. So I'll be brief here, because we did a whole mini lecture on this for the Society of Behavioral Sleep Medicine that's archived on their website. But what we look at is a couple of things. We look at if they're meeting criteria for PTSD and they're having nightmares, which is the primary for the patient. What do they want to treat first? For some people, they are sleeping so very little. 2 hours a night, 3 hours a night, that it might be more advantageous to fix the sleep first, to treat the nightmares, to improve overall sleep quality and continuity so that they can better benefit from a cognitive behavioral type intervention for PTSD. For other people, if we treat PTSD first, we may get those nightmares. That nightmare disorder may not have taken on a life of its own. It may just be subsumed under the PTSD. And so we may do that. What I always do is kind of lay out all the options to the patient, talk about those risks and benefits, those ways of thinking about it, and encourage them to make a decision. This is not something that we have great research. You know, I'd love to have a flow chart that says if A, then B. If somebody wants to take on that research, I'd love to see it, to have greater predictability. But right now the good news is we've got evidence-based treatments. And it really is about patient choice.
Wow. Okay. All right. So then the next question comes up, because this is something that I just recently was having a conversation with a colleague about, and it actually applies, as I think back to different patients that I've worked with over time, it's come up a couple times. And here's what that question is. So let's say somebody says, I'm having nightmares, and my nightmares are related to a situation that really happened. So let's come up with a situation. I'm a single female living in my own apartment. I was dating a guy who ended up being somewhat abusive. I broke off the relationship because of it. And one night, he still had a key to my place. He came in and he basically assaulted me, you know, because he was angry, upset about the relationship ending, so on and so forth. And as a result from that, I have had this nightmare. Now, the reality is this is still fresh, and I'm concerned that this could happen again in reality. So I'm very concerned about it. And that kind of keeps me up, but it also gives me this recurring nightmare. Is there anything that you can do nightmare treatment-wise about that? Because you still have this potential threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. The potential threat doesn't have to be gone in order to treat the symptom. This is an unusual thing that we think about in mental health that we wouldn't think about in other branches of, you know, of medicine or treatment. Yeah, I think we would do some safety planning. We would talk with her about those kinds of steps that she could take that involve, you know, reports to people in positions of legal authority. You know, I would want her to have all those options available to her. But why continue to have disrupted sleep? So I would absolutely talk about options for treating those nightmares, because people are having nightmares from the event that happened. And that event has passed. There may be still some threat that other events will happen. We can't ever get rid of all the threat, but it doesn't mean that we don't need to sleep well.
I see. Great, great. So let me ask you this then. Let's kind of flip the script for a minute. What about some success stories, some good news that, you know, you've experienced using nightmare treatment with some of your patients?
How much time do we have? Oh my goodness. That's what keeps me doing. That's what keeps me doing this really, really difficult work. I think, you know, there's been a number of those kinds of success stories across my career. And oftentimes the people, if they make it to me, they've been really struggling for quite some time. I tend to get people who have more complexity or more difficulty. And so I'm thinking of, you know, I'll kind of de-identify and change a few details, but a woman very similar to what you talked about who'd been assaulted, and she wasn't having necessarily nightmares about that assault experience, but she was having what we call symbolic or intermediate nightmares. So it has the same themes, some of the same images of that threat. So issues with safety and trust of other people. And so she was having these nightmares 3 to 4 times a week. And we started working through exposure, relaxation, and prescription therapy, which is a type of cognitive behavioral therapy for nightmares. Usually last 5 to 6 sessions. That's the other thing that I love about these treatments is they're brief, but powerful. And so we did some work around improving her sleep as a whole, some things that may be familiar to people who do cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. We also started looking at taking the different intervention elements that are part of nightmare treatment and applying them to kind of each part of the nightmare cycle. So she was going to bed with a lot of hyperarousal, anticipating having another nightmare, feeling like, you know, this was something that was going to be with her for forever. A lot of beliefs about nightmares that contributed to that sensation of being alert and agitated at night, which increases the likelihood of nightmares. So we gave her some strategies for that, things like progressive muscle relaxation. And we used guided imagery, and I use both of those skills in an intentional way because, one, we want to reduce the agitation and arousal that somebody goes to bed with, but guided imagery also starts to build skills for when we do rescription of the nightmare. And so teaching people how to really picture things vividly helps when we get to the next step, which was exposure to the nightmare, writing out the nightmare, the most common version of it, kind of figuring out where in that nightmare things got dangerous or intense, and then making some changes and giving her power. When, if she faces the nightmare, you know, in session with me while we're writing it out, she may be able to see it a little bit differently and to think about it in a different way, get more power over the nightmare. And then we work on something called rescription, which is this idea of changing the nightmare to something that is more neutral or more positive, a dream that she would like to have. And oftentimes we bring in kind of these different themes. So she had issues with safety and power and control. And so we increased her safety by putting imagery into her new dream that gave her a greater sense of safety. You know, some people get really creative with this. They like to build in superhero toys or, you know, more locks or whatever it is, and then power and control. So she was able to kind of make herself bigger through this big super suit, right, that helped her to have some power over the attacker and you know, kind of chase him away. And so we worked on building in that rehearsal during the day. And the idea is we're kind of creating new pathways for the brain to take. And so if we have this new dream, then we're able to change what happens at night. And so we intervene at all those different points in the nightmare cycle.
Wow. There's a lot in there. I can definitely imagine some people are having questions about sort of rewriting your own nightmare when you're awake. And I'd love to explore that a little bit more, but we got to take a break and we'll come back and answer that question. So we'll see you back in just a bit on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We'll see you in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Sleep Science Today offers a lot of great resources for our listeners, including a popular sleep support group. Don't miss out on what we have to offer. Find all of our resources at sleepsciencetoday.com. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe to this channel.
Sleep Science Today.
All right. We are back on Sleep Science Today. We're talking nightmares. And just before the break, we were talking about treatment for nightmare. And part of the treatment was this sort of re-scripting where you're writing your own story. Can you tell us a little bit more about, like, what's going on behind that? So, you know, a person is sleeping. They have this horrible nightmare. It's scary. It wakes them up. And now we're saying that when they're awake, they're able to write their own story. How does that transfer over into nighttime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one of the ones that patients most often have some healthy skepticism about. We're like, what are you actually asking me to do? And so this idea of writing out your old nightmare, this idea of exposure and you know, trauma and anxiety therapists will recognize that idea of exposure as a treatment. This is one area where Dr. Michael Nadorf, my co-author, and I differ. I am a staunch exposure therapist. I think we probably need the exposure. He says you don't try it without it first. And then if you need it, you can come back to it. So in some versions, like ERRT, we actually have people to write out that nightmare, and exposure during the day helps people to take a new perspective, to get more control over it. Because remember, most people are trying really hard to avoid. They don't want to think about that during the day or at night, but avoidance of it actually gives it some more power. So we teach people they can face it. And then we work on re-scripting. And so this is true across most nightmare interventions that we're having people to write out a new story. So if you think about one of my favorite kind of analogies for this is if you think about walking through the woods, you have this really clear pathway that's been cleared. It's easy to take that pathway. It's well-worn. That's the nightmare pathway. Our brain has learned, if we go to bed anxious, let me pull in that imagery, we're going to go down this path. And it increases that habitual rehearsal of the nightmare. What we do in treatment is we create a new path for the brain to take. We don't have to dream about those old things, but we have to give it some really specific instructions, right? We have to go in there and clear that path out so that it becomes easier. And then the more times we take it, like rehearsal during the day, the easier it is to travel that path at night. And so We work on really, really creating a vivid story of a dream that somebody would like to have. They rehearse it during the day. And then that makes it more likely at night that the brain will take that path. And people will start to have less nightmares, less intense nightmares, less frequent nightmares. There's some variations in how people see that recovery, but the target nightmare really starts to decrease.
Wow. Really interesting. I'm sure that's very provides a lot of relief to people when they're able to do that. So these things that we're talking about here, the treatment process and all, are these, I'm assuming obviously these are things that you cover in your book, but is this from the perspective of your book, is this something that somebody would be able to read about and kind of do on their own? Or what would they expect if they read the book? And again, the name of the book, The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. What would they expect? Because it says toolkit, so I'm assuming there's tools for them.
There's tools for them. So in The Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit, I really started thinking about what does somebody need to know in order to use these powerful interventions on their own? And so we start out with just some basic background about what is sleep and what are nightmares, kind of like what you and I have been talking about today. And then we lay out all of those different treatment options and intervention elements, and we give people a way to choose. So the best intervention is the one that's evidence-based and that somebody's willing to do. So if exposure sounds like something you're not willing to do, try it without it, right? There are other tools that we can use. So we go through the book and help people to kind of design their plan for the next several weeks of what they're going to try. We also teach people how to track their sleep and nightmares so that we can measure if we're making progress across time. And the tools are all there so that you can come back to them at any time, or you can make different choices as you go through. Really, what I found is it's most helpful for people to know what all the options are and to use them. And so these are treatment elements that the book is designed for anybody to kind of pick up and use on their own, for people to use with their loved ones. Or we've actually gotten a lot of feedback from other healthcare providers that they're picking it up and using it in their practice to help their patients. Or if they're doing some other treatment with a patient, maybe they're recommending the book so that they can work through those pieces on their own.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So if somebody has nightmares and they're working through the book, at what point would it be appropriate for them to be thinking about a more professional type of intervention?
So I think it depends on the individual. Sometimes when people have comorbid conditions, so if they're noticing, you know, that maybe the nightmares are maybe getting better, but they're noticing more of those sleep apnea episodes, they may want to seek out care. If somebody is noticing that, you know, the nightmare is changing, or they're not getting the results that they expect, or they have conditions that go along with it, like PTSD, depression, anxiety, if it feels like more than what you can handle on your own, then I would say reach out for professional help. I mean, I think some people don't have access to care. That's one of the reasons why we bought it. Some people don't want to come into care. That's another reason why we wrote the book. But evidence-based treatment with a professional is always an option. And sometimes people come and, you know, kind of do the book with a professional. They may feel more comfortable working through it with a therapist. So I think a lot of different applications. But if you're unsure, I would say talk to a provider.
Yeah. Okay. So that raises an interesting question in and of itself. So you talked about working with a therapist and things like that. In reality, if somebody is looking for a professional who's trained to treat nightmares, is this something where they could go to any therapist that they can just find access to, or do they need to find a particular type of therapist? And either way, where do they find this person?
They can come see me at Upward Behavioral Health. There are, you know, I see people across 43 states in the United States. So oftentimes I do see a lot of people who haven't been able to find. And I have a couple colleagues at Upward that also treat nightmares, because there's not always a good resource, especially if you're in a rural area or you're not near, you know, an academic medical center or professional setting. Sometimes it is harder to find these treatments. If you are looking for a therapist for nightmare treatment, I would often encourage people to look for somebody who has specialized training in behavioral sleep medicine. And so you can find that through a couple of different resources. The Society for Behavioral Sleep Medicine, of which you and I are both affiliated, we have a directory listserv on the website, so you can find somebody close to you who has some of those credentials and training. Somebody who has a diplomate in behavioral sleep medicine has that kind of credential of having extra training, though certainly there are a lot of behavioral sleep medicine professionals who would be qualified. But I think it's worth asking those questions. If you call an office, if you're looking for a provider, if you found somebody through your health insurance, to ask about their experience treating sleep problems and nightmares. And sometimes they will be able to help, and they'll have those qualifications and feel comfortable. But lots of times they can, if they don't, they have a referral source. They can help you connect to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my experience.
So is this the type of thing I'm thinking of, you know, someone who is, you know, having a hard time finding a provider, they're going through all of this and they're still struggling. Maybe they live in an area where there just isn't a lot of access or whatever the cause may be. Is this something that if they did have a counselor, a therapist who wasn't trained in nightmares, but they had the book and they wanted to work through it together, would they be able to do that?
I think it's certainly worth trying. You know, all therapists are going to make their own determination about what they feel like was in their scope of practice or within their ethics to do. But we've certainly got a lot of feedback from providers that, you know, that's what they intend to do. That's what they found. They're going to use this to augment their practice. Maybe they've had some experience with treating nightmares or treating sleep, and so they're going to use this to give them other skills and other toolkits. I actually talked to somebody earlier this week that messaged me and said, I'm using your book to treat my nightmare patient. And so she's like, where do I get these forms? What sleep diary should I do? And I, you know, said, well, so glad you asked, right? On the New Harbinger website, our publisher website, there are those free tools. So you've got a sleep diary, you've got some bonus chapters about nightmares in kids and about trauma treatments. And then I had the opportunity to go into the recording studio and record deep breathing and guided imagery and progressive muscle relaxation so that people can go and get free tools. They can download it. They can just listen to it and use that to practice some of the skills that we teach in the book. So there's a lot of opportunities there.
Fantastic. Yeah. You are so good at projecting what my next question is going to be, and then you answer it, and then I come back and I ask it again. So here's the one I was going to ask, and you partially answered it, but I want to get a really, really clear answer. So we have not talked about where someone can get this book or get access to all the things you were just talking about.
Yeah. So it is available as a paperback or as an ebook through the New Harbinger website. So New Harbinger Publications is our publisher, and that's where you can get access to the book. You can also get access to the free tools on that website. It's also available wherever you buy books. So big box retailers, bookstores, online outlets, and regardless of where you buy the book, you still have access to those free tools on the New Harbinger website. You just have to create a free login to get the tools. So wherever you like to buy your books, that's where it is. And if it's not, ask them to get it for you.
Right. Perfect. So I'll repeat the title one more time for everybody, which is the Nightmare and Sleep Disorder Toolkit. We actually have reached our time. So Dr. Courtney Worley, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to share all this wonderful information with us. Hopefully, any listeners who are experiencing nightmares or know someone who is experiencing nightmares, here's some great information for you and some great resources. Any final words for us to take away?
I think the biggest thing that I always want to convey is that nightmares are treatable. You don't have to continue to suffer with your sleep. It's brief, usually 5 to 6 sessions if you're working with a therapist, about that same number of weeks if you're working through it on the book on your own. And so, you know, reach out, ask for help if you need it. But nightmares are treatable. You don't have, they're not just something that you have or have to continue to have. And that's a big myth that I end up busting, that I'm just the kind of person that has nightmares. You don't have to be. You can sleep.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Worley, I want to thank you again for taking your time. For those of you listening, be sure to visit us on our website at sleepsciencetoday.com. You'll see access to all sorts of resources and good information. We try and keep everything up to date. You'll even find access to this radio show, and you can see the YouTube version where you can see it and actually watch us, not just listen to us. So we will see you on a future episode of Sleep Science Today. And again, sleepsciencetoday.com. We look forward to seeing you there, and good sleeping.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.